After all, most ladies like to hide behind closed doors with their attendants nearby.
Perhaps. But I find that I am interested in understanding more about the pitiful creature that is the Shambler. How could such a mindless ghoul wreak such havoc? What is the nature of this menace the Lord created to test us?
It matters not, my dear. It is God's wrath for our sins.
The sheriff lights his cigarette and looks out at the horizon.
The dead never walked until brother fought brother, until we penitent folk betrayed one another.
Catherine makes a choked sound, but when the sheriff turns back to her, she is all smiles. Yes, sir. Thank you for explaining. He just nods.
Well then, enjoy indulging your curiosity. Why don't you and your girl join me for supper? I know you haven't gotten your rations yet today, and I'd hate to see a lady such as yourself go hungry.
Thank you, Sheriff. I look forward to the company. There's not a hint of fear or doubt in Catherine's words, and the sheriff rides off. I step nearer to Catherine. Do you think that was wise? I don't think I have a choice. And besides, we're looking for an opportunity to take him out, aren't we? You have your sickles now. Ain't much use against guns, I hiss. Surely he'll be armed, and probably have a few of his boys in attendance if he knows I'm going to be there. Well, I suppose you'd better think of something else, then. I open my mouth to argue and quickly snap it closed. The set of Catherine's jaw warns that she's sorely vexed, and I ain't one to tempt a tiger. I once saw Catherine thrash a girl soundly who had the bad fortune to slander her name. I have no intention of getting on her bad side, especially not now when I'm going to need her help. She might be highly unreasonable, but she's still my friend, and we are in this together. So I say nothing as we walk through the bodies of the dead toward the outer wall. I move off to examine a pile of them. From what I can tell, most of them were recently turned. There's little of the decomposition you see on most long-dead shamblers. None of the older clothing or loose-hanging skin. But I don't recognize any of the faces, either. Where'd all these folks come from? Gideon's theory is looking more likely every minute. Jane, Catherine calls for my attention, kneeling next to one of the dead. Did you know this one? She's wearing the same clothing as you had from working the patrols. I move over to see what she's looking at, a surprised bubble of sadness welling up. Well, that ain't no good. Yeah. I know her. Knew her. Lying on the ground, her head a few feet away from her body, is Cora. I didn't like the big girl. I ain't never been a fan of snitches. But turning Shambler is not a fate I'd wish on anyone. Not even the girl who got me whipped. I look around at this group and gesture with my hand. It's half the fence team, as well as a few folks from the patrols.
Oh, God, Jane! That's Mr. Spencer.
I look over to where Catherine points and swear loudly. Catherine doesn't reprimand me, just purses her lips. We keep walking, our hearts growing heavier with every person we recognize. There are a few more white folks in finer clothing, and I'm starting to wonder why they ain't storming the sheriff's office, asking where their loved ones are. Sure, no one is going to miss the Negroes from the fence team, but Mr. Spencer and these other white folks, they have families here.
Kate?
The fence team was turned, and they work out on the fringes. How did townspeople from the good part of town end up out where the fence mending team usually works? No one would leave the inner safety of the town willingly. Catherine's brows draw together. What are you thinking? That the sheriff dragged them out to the edge? I nod. Maybe you're right. Maybe the white folks in the nice side of town were getting restless. Alan said the drovers are looking for greener pastures. What if the sheriff had his boys drag a few malcontents out there to the fringe to teach them a lesson and something went wrong?
You think they got overrun?
If the sheriff's boys had taken a large group of people to the wall to show them why Summerland was their only hope, it might have been enough to make the dead swarm, like bees detecting a threat, but in this case, food. When we patrolled the wall, we worked in groups of two, but there are at least 20 well-dressed folks out here.
So?
That many folks, loitering about, may have put the dead into a frenzy. What if there's more on their way, as we speak? The prairie looks clear now, but Gideon said the attacks would get more frequent and larger. And we have two unrepaired breaks in the exterior wall. Catherine stumbles to a stop.
Jane, this is bad.
I know. We need to go and speak to the sheriff. Convince him to barricade the town before it's overrun. Consolidate everyone into a few defensible buildings. We're too vulnerable, waiting for the next attack. Kate, that's suicide. Besides, you know there's no way that he's going to listen to us. She sighs and purses her lips.
Maybe, but we have to try.
Catherine stalks off back toward town, and I look to the pale blue sky for strength before following after her.
Return to me, Jane, please. As soon as you are able, come back to Rose Hill. We need you.
Chapter 36, in which all hell breaks loose once more. Once we're back within the city limits, Catherine heads straight for the sheriff's office. But before we get there, we're intercepted by Ida, her eyes wild as she runs full tilt toward us.
Did you hear? Did you hear?
When she reaches us, she's panting, her chest heaving. I shake my head.
No, we didn't hear anything. What's happening?
A pack, bigger than last night's, was spotted a few miles off the eastern border once more. The sheriff is sending everyone out to meet them, but the drovers refused to fight this time, and the sheriff can't do anything about it. He's sending just the patrols. We've woken the night teams, but there just aren't enough of us to take on a horde.
Ida looks from me to Catherine.
We're not going to survive this time, Jane.
I exchange a look with Catherine. We're too late. Ida looks from me to Catherine and back again.
Is there something you're not telling me?
We quickly fill her in on what Gideon told us, her warm bronze skin going gray.
We can't win against that many shamblers. That man is a monster. He and his boys are going to send us all to die.
I nod. Yep. But we intend to stop that from happening. Catherine puts her hands on her hips.
Right. I'll go speak with the sheriff. You go ask the Duchess if she'll spread the word that everyone needs to fight if we're going to beat back the approaching horde.
Have you lost all sense in that pretty head of yours? Fighting is suicide. We need to run.
Jane, where are we supposed to go? We're in the middle of the prairie. It's better to shelter in place here than take our chances on the open range where they can just run us down.
Catherine flounces off toward the sheriff's office, and I turn to Ida. Don't listen to her. Tell the patrols to grab whatever weapons they have and any rations they can find and leave. Pretend like you're going out to face down the dead if anyone asks you. I'm going to take care of the sheriff while you all get out. Half the folks should head north and half should head east. We need to get clear of the wall before the shamblers get into town. Walls didn't just keep things out, after all. They also kept folks in. I worry that everyone will try to flee the same direction, and the wall will end up a grand choke point, serving up panicked folks to the dead. Ida gives me a lopsided grin.
Got it. Good luck.
I give her a wink and run inside of the saloon. I pause just past the threshold, waiting for my eyes to adjust. Once they do, I realize that the saloon is empty, excepting for the bartender, polishing glasses.
Where's the Duchess? I call.
In her room, back down the hall.
She got company?
Nope.
There's a horde headed this way. You need to grab what you can and get out of town.
The bartender looks at me all wide-eyed.
What about the wall?
That damn wall ain't helping anyone now. Only running can save us. I dash full tilt down the narrow hallway. When I get to the Duchess's room, the door is closed, and I knock.
Duchess, it's Jane. We need to get out of town.
There's rustling on the other side of the door, and then it opens a few inches. I walk in.
Shut the door behind you.
The room's got a sick, coppery scent to it, and I do as the Duchess asks. It's pitch dark, the curtains drawn, and hotter than the dickens.
You okay?
I'm going to cut right to it, my dear. The sheriff knows that Catherine ain't a real lady.
There's a choked sound to her voice, and I swallow the lump of dread in my throat.
How you know that?
He came by this morning for his weekly appointment and told me.
The curtain draws back, flooding the room momentarily with light, and I get a glimpse of the Duchess's face, her lips swollen, eye blackened, before the curtain falls back into place. My heart nearly stops.
I don't understand. How'd he find out?
That father of his. He apparently followed up with a couple of the newer families in town once the sheriff took a shine to Catherine. And after some conversation, it seems they remembered a pretty blonde attendant who was light enough to pass from a couple months back. Sheriff Snyder threatened me, told me he'd kill me if I didn't tell him the truth.
She's dead, Jane. Both of you are.
I can scarcely believe this is all happening. Right now. All right. I need to go get her. But we've got even more pressing issues to tend to.
I tell you, the sheriff is out for blood. And you say there's something more important than that?
There's a horde on its way. Big enough to wipe us off the map. We don't get the town evacuated, we're all dead.
The Duchess doesn't move for a long time.
We could just hole up here.
The wall is wrecked. It ain't gonna do naught for us but trap us in. What is it with people and their fixation on this damn town? We need to run. You need to gather up your girls and make a break for it.
The Duchess doesn't answer for a long moment, and I take a deep breath.
Please, you've been kind to me, and if it wasn't for you, I'd most likely be dead of infection of some sort. You have to grab what you can and run. I know it feels hasty, but trust me when I say Summerland ain't safe. It never was.
And with that, I run out of the room, hightailing it to Catherine, hoping I ain't too late.
Oh, Jane, I was a fool. So very, very naive. I'm afraid it's all gone wrong, and the only person I have to blame is myself. I knew one day my secret would be out. Auntie Aggie told me as much. But I never thought it would ruin everything we'd built.
Chapter 37. In which I sin yet again. I dash across the street, dodging the folks gathering in the road. The drovers are bunched up in front of the sheriff's office shouting and waving guns. From snippets of conversation, I gather that they want the sheriff to open the door. Tell them what's happening. They still can't see that it's time to cut bait and hotfoot it out of town.
Move!
I yell, pushing through the drovers, throwing my sharp elbow into soft bits when a few of the men refuse to budge. A particularly large man looms before me, an impassable wall, so I change my trajectory, moving parallel to the boardwalk until I find an opening. All the while, a little voice in my head is urging me to hurry to the sheriff's office. How long does it take for a man to strangle a woman? My brain runs through a million violent tableaus, and still I haven't made it to Catherine's side. That's it, I mutter. I grab the man in front of me, boosting myself up onto his shoulders. He's barely had time to react before I've hopped to the next man, using the drovers as stepping stones. I lose my balance before the sheriff's door, tumbling against it. It bangs open, and I half fall into the office.
Now, Jane, that's what I call an entrance, the sheriff drawls. We were just coming to find you.
He gestures with his pistol, the business end pointed right at me. And I crawl the rest of the way in, the door closing behind me. I try to climb to my feet, but before I can, a boot lodges itself in my side, digging into the soft spot just below my ribs. I instinctively curl into a ball.
Boys, boys! There will be plenty of time for that later. Get her on her feet. Elias, this is highly unnecessary. Kill them and be done with it.
The pastor's voice is ice water on my soul, and the wave of fear I've been fighting to hold back threatens to drown me.
Not now, Pop. Let me deal with this in my own way.
I'm hauled up by hands on my upper arms, my breath still a bit ragged from getting kicked. Kate, you okay? I ask. I can barely see her in the gloom of the office. The window was boarded up sometime between last night and today, and the furniture is all pushed around, almost like the sheriff is planning on hunkering down in his office rather than facing the nightmare that's about to greet the town.
Oh, I'm fine, Jane. But I do believe the good sheriff has lost his mind.
Her voice is just as matter-of-fact as ever, and my relief bubbles up in ill-advised laughter, which I swallow back down. Well, good to know. I shift my weight and address the sheriff. You do realize there's a horde on the way.
Gideon may have mentioned it.
I keep my voice even. There's no way a place like Summerland will survive a pack of that magnitude. Your big pretty wall didn't save your sorry hide. What do you think a few boards on the window will do?
The Lord will see us through this trial the same way he saw the Israelites through the desert. I've sent the patrols out to put down the approaching pack, after which those men out there will repair the wall and things will be as they were.
The Lord helps those who help themselves, Sheriff. We need to hightail it out of here. Get that father of yours to pray for us along the way. Otherwise, none of us are going to see the sunset. There's a long pause, and then a wheezing sound, like someone is choking on a hard candy. What the hell is that?
Language, Jane, Catherine says. And I do believe that sound is the sheriff laughing.
I am indeed having a good chuckle. I figured that the only way this is actually happening is if someone is having to go at me, because there is no way that some random darky girl is telling me how to run my town.
The sheriff grabs Catherine, Bob and Bill, taking that as a cue to raise their guns as well. I can feel the weight of their regard, but I stand my ground. From his chair, the pastor sighs.
It's about time.
Outside, the clamor grows as people begin to pound the door. The number of folks in the streets must be increasing, as word of the approaching horde begins to make its way through the town. At this rate, we'll have mass hysteria before too long, and when that happens, we're all goners.
Sheriff, the horde on its way is of remarkable size. We need to leave, not try to save this godforsaken place. Why can't you see that?
Summerland is a city on the hill, the pastor says, raising his hands in supplication, as though he's appealing to a higher power.
I ignore the man and direct my words to the sheriff. This town was built by Mayor Carr and his politician cronies. You willing to give your life for some rich man's delusions?
Delusions? Summerland ain't no delusion. This place is the foundation of a new America, one that embraces the promise of greatness our founding fathers once made. Don't you see? Darkies, they got their place, and it ain't brushing elbows with respectable folk.
He yells this last bit at Catherine. Spittle flies from the sheriff's lips as he speaks, and as she fights to maintain her sense of calm, she still flinches away from the sheriff's crazed words. Even in the low light, I can see an unholy gleam in the sheriff's eyes. Plenty of folks share his attitude, but something fundamental has snapped in him. I wonder what pushed him over the edge. What made a man so coldly reasonable sink into what very much looks like madness? Maybe he truly did fall in love with Catherine, and maybe the knowledge that she was playing him broke his heart as well as his mind. My heart pounds, and mentally I'm counting the seconds as they tick past. How much closer is the approaching horde? Have they breached the wall? Have they reached the interior fence? I turn to Bill, who sweats, his shotgun shaking visibly. You look like a man who wants to live. Please tell the sheriff that ain't no amount of proselytizing is going to keep that undead horde from overrunning us. Bill points the rifle at me.
What's that mean?
He turns to Bob, who is just as agitated as the sheriff.
What does that even mean?
To proselytize means to preach a certain way of thinking. In this case, the cause of the survivalists, I answer, mentally calculating distance and time. Each moment talking with these fools means we're a moment closer to death. Even Daniel Boone couldn't have survived a horde of shamblers. There ain't no way we're going to. While I'm talking, I edge closer to Bill. He's distracted, terrified at the thought of a horde descending on the town, and even Bob looks a mite bit unsure. If I work quickly, I could grab Bob's rifle and take him out of the equation. I catch Catherine's eye, and something about the jut of her chin makes me think that she's thinking the same thing I am, that maybe she's also planning a bit of heroics. It's dark, though, and only a small bit of light filters through the window, so I could be wrong. I raise an eyebrow in Bob's direction and she twitches her head. Anyone else? And I would question this reckless act, but this is Catherine. She's a Miss Preston's girl, and I trust her with my life. I grab the barrel of Bob's gun, spinning around and using my momentum to wrest it from his grip. He falls forward, unbalanced, and I put him in front of me as a shield just as Bill pulls the trigger. Bob falls, and I quickly level the shotgun at Bill. This close, the buckshot rips through his chest, sending him to the ground, his rifle clattering to the floor. Two down, one to go. I rack the shotgun and turn it on the sheriff, who now points his revolver at Catherine's temple. Her defiant look changes to one of naked fear, and I swear to myself, I thought she was planning her own maneuver, but since she still has a gun pointed at her head, maybe not. Looks like we got ourselves a bit of a Confederate standoff, I say, ignoring the voice inside that urges me to hurry. The sheriff gives me an evil smile.
If you don't want me to paint the wall with her brains, you'll put the shotgun down right now. Just shoot the pickaninny,
the pastor yells, lurching to his feet. Spittle flies from his mouth, and the distraction is just what I need to end this whole mess. Catherine must think so as well. She goes limp in the sheriff's arms, dragging him off balance. Sheriff Snyder stumbles forward, so I pull the trigger, as does the sheriff. The sheriff flies back, but I am frozen in time and space. All of the ruckus outside disappears, and there is only a rushing sound in my ears. I am certain that my recklessness has just killed Catherine. But then she quickly scrambles to her feet, scooping up Bill's fallen rifle as she crosses the room to stand next to me. A heavy relief nearly weighs me down. The sheriff's shot went wide. Catherine turns around and looks behind her. Blood spatters the side of her dress.
You shot the sheriff.
That I did.
You tore apart his throat, she says, voice flat, and I think she might actually be in a bit of a battle haze.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I was aiming for his face, I say. I'm still reeling from thinking I'd murdered Catherine and the overwhelming joy I now feel. The last time I felt this way was when Jackson came traipsing through the door. Miss Folsom was right. An inch really does make a heap of a difference.
She was talking about long range with a rifle, Jane.
I shrug.
Whatever.
Catherine stares at me, and I give her a small smile.
You just killed a man, and you're smiling, she says.
Well, he wasn't a very good person. I'm glad he's dead. Catherine looks back at the sheriff's dead body, lifting one of her fair hands to her cheek, which is dotted with bits of the dead man.
I worry about your immortal soul, Jane.
I flash her a toothsome grin. Ain't you got enough real-world problems to keep you busy? She starts to laugh, the sound quickly turning into a broken sob. I wrap her up in my arms and squeeze her tight.
Hey, hey! It's okay. You're okay, and we're okay.
Well, at least until that pack of shamblers gets here. Her arms wrap around my middle, returning the embrace.
I know. I just... For a minute, I thought he was going to kill me. I'm not ready to die, Jane.
Well, then, I reckon we should get out of here.
Negress Jezebel!
Comes a wheezing voice from the side of the office. We turn. In my joy at seeing Catherine unharmed, I'd completely forgotten about the pastor. He lies on the ground, a hole in his shoulder, and blood soaking his jacket. I have my answer as to where the sheriff's wild shot got to.
Harlot,
the preacher says, bloody foam flecking his lips. He struggles into a sitting position. Catherine takes a step forward, but I put her to the side, handing her the shotgun I hold. Why don't you go see what else the armory has in your size? We still got a whole bunch of dead to face.
What about him? She says, her voice uncertain. Oh, I'll take care of him.
But she drifts off, pushing her lips into a thin line. I bend down to pick up the sheriff's revolver. It's a nice piece, and the heft and weight of it feels just right in my hand. The sheriff's hat, with its wide brim, is a few feet away and mostly free of blood. I pick it up and put it on, adjusting it so that it sits at a jaunty angle. Catherine scowls at me.
Jane.
What? He's dead. He ain't gonna need it anymore.
Besides, this is a quality bit of haberdashery. Catherine says nothing, and finally makes her way to the armory.
See if they got a belt to hold my sickles, I call.
Her response is silence. The preacher's breath is coming in pants and whistles now, and his front is pretty well soaked through with blood. He won't last much longer. I grab a chair and swing it over near where he reclines on the floor. His breaths come faster as I sit down, and I give him a wide smile.
Now, no need to panic. I ain't gonna kill you.
I reckon that leak in your chest is going to do that. I cross my legs and lean back in the chair, the revolver heavy in my lap. Since you're a man of God, I'm going to tell you a story. Confess some sins. The pastor doesn't respond, so I continue. You recall the years of discord? I was only a child, but I remember them. The constant fear of someone turning, the packs of dead prowling the countryside, The news that another person had died, only to return and eat half the household, it was unbearable. I still picture the fear on my mama's face whenever we got word another person went missing. But we endured. We came to be self-sufficient. We built strong fences. And we learned to work together to survive. But my mama's husband? Well, he was a man like you. Enamored of the past. Stubborn. He returned home after things had settled as the years of discord came to an end. As something like that order you speak of was restored. And he brought with him all the fear and turmoil of that time. He had the idea that he was still the master of the plantation, that the old ways should hold sway. He beat anyone who stepped out of line. He sent children out on patrols. People died needlessly, and he counted it the price of progress. He had it in his head to build something like your Summerland right there on Rose Hill, and damned if anyone was going to stand in his way. So one night, after he had gotten a bit drunk and more than a bit violent, I snuck down to my mama's study and stole her gun. And the next morning, while he was still abed, I shot him twice in the head, the way my mama had taught me to put down a shambler. The pastor's eyes go wide with terror, and I shrug. See, the problem in this world ain't sinners, or even the dead. It is men who will step on anyone who stands in the way of their pursuit of power. Luckily, there will always be people like me to stop them. I stand and resettle the sheriff's hat, now my hat. That horde will be coming through town soon enough. And if you ain't already dead by then, the shamblers will surely oblige. As for me, I've got quite enough stains on my soul, so I hope you meet your end quickly. Either way, when you get to hell, give the man who fathered me, Major McKean, my regards. I head into the armory. Catherine stands there, open-mouthed. I don't know how much she heard. But it seems to have been enough. I can't meet her gaze. My mama is passing light, just like you, I say, because she deserves to know. She was a slave. When her mistress died on the road to meet her fiancé, my mama pretended to be her, and that's how she came to be the mistress of Rose Hill. It near drove her mad, all the lying and subterfuge, but she did it to save her family, to save everyone. When I was born, it was only a matter of time before her secret was compromised. She should have killed me. And one time she tried, but I survived. Jane, Catherine begins, but I hold up my hand. I know what I asked of you, and I'm eternally grateful. You helped to save my life, I say. Now, we might not survive what comes next, and I just wanted you to know that I appreciate you. Catherine grabs me up into a hug, her tears hot against my face. I pat her awkwardly. Not now. We got a horde bearing down on us. I reckon we've dawdled long enough. She gives a hollow laugh and releases me, then steps forward and grabs a pair of mollies. Twin swords as long as a woman's forearm and wickedly sharp on either side. Of course, Catherine would naturally grab the flashiest weapons available. Our moment of confession is over, and now there is only work. Catherine catches me watching her as she straps the swords across her back. These are quality blades, Jane. How can you even tell? I can barely even see anything in here. She crosses her arms and taps her foot. That is not something I want to hear after you just shot a man who had been standing right behind me. I suppose you're right. Now, let's see if we can't generate a few more miracles between the two of us and save some of these miserable people. Catherine nods, and we head to the door. I pause on the threshold, my hand on the knob. Kate? Yes? Take off that damn corset.
We're going out to face down a horde, not to a ball.
It isn't a full corset, it's a half corset. It's the newest style. Besides, Jane, the day I cannot take down a few shamblers wearing something fashionable is the day I turn in my rifle.
I grin at her and say nothing, just tip my hat in acknowledgement. I'm almost out the door when I look down and pause. A few inches from the toe of my boot is my penny, looking just the way it did the day Bill took it from me. I lean and pick it up. It's clean of blood, and the leather thong looks new. In my hand it's warm, and a sense of rightness heats me from the inside out as I drape it over my head.
What's that? Catherine asks.
Just a bit of luck. She purses her lips.
Good. We're going to need it.
Hopefully this letter finds you, although none of my other letters have been answered. I love you, my darling daughter, and the news I share is grim. Rose Hill is gone, Jane. I have been betrayed by a pretty face, my secret writ large for the world. Those of us who are left have fled. We travel west to California and the promise of a new life. Find me, Jane.
Chapter 38, in which we reach the end of our tale. Catherine and I stand in front of the entrance to the sheriff's office and survey the chaos. People yell at us, 100 questions at once, spittle flying as they work themselves into a fine fit.
We should probably tell them something, Catherine says. A scream pierces the air, so loud and fraught with fear that it gives me a chill despite the heat of the day. And like an angel on high delivering the message from the Lord Almighty comes the shout,
Shamblers! There's shamblers in town!
I glance at Catherine and grin. Sometimes a problem solves itself. People go running past, men and women, and I grab Catherine by the arm and drag her off the boardwalk in the direction of the church as the men start to scatter. A few have the presence of mind to run into the sheriff's office to hide, but I ain't got time to pay them any mind now.
Jane, we've got to get to the other side of town and fetch Lily and the Spencers. Mrs. Spencer and her boy won't be any good at fighting the dead, and Lily is just a little girl.
Catherine purses her lips and nods.
Lead the way.
It is utter chaos. Men and women run here and there, seemingly aimless, while shamblers walk the street leisurely, grasping for whoever gets close. Most of these shamblers are old and barely holding together. Men in wool uniforms missing limbs, women in full dresses that are decades out of fashion. Negroes wearing the wretched uniforms of the old plantations, boys and girls who drag themselves along, tiny nightmares in their own right. Here and there is someone unexpected, a man dressed in the heavy garb of a fur trapper, an Indian woman with long dark hair wearing the rough homespun of white settlers. Men wearing uniforms I don't recognize, the red and dark blue very different from the Union and Confederate uniforms that most shamblers wear. And there are so many of them. A tidal wave of the dead breaking over the town. I'm frozen for a few precious moments, taking in this horrible scene, watching the inexorable march of the shamblers, when a strong grip on my arm jolts me out of my shock.
Let's move, Catherine demands, as bossy as ever. Jane? Which way?
The Duchess and a couple of her girls run up to me. I'm happy to see one of them is Nessie, the colored girl who braided my hair and brought me water the day I was whipped. I don't recognize the other girl, a white girl with brown hair and freckles who gives me a shy smile.
Everything is chaos.
Just like that, the uncertainty disappears, and I know what we have to do.
Follow me. We can cut through town using Gideon's tunnel.
We hurry through the street toward the lab,
But when we get there, the door is locked.
Gideon never locks his door,
the Duchess says, worry making her bruised face look even more tragic. These are extraordinary times. A tendril of worry tries to rise up, but I smash it flat. I glance toward the street. The shamblers are getting more numerous, flooding into town. Pretty soon they'll be too thick to maneuver, and that's when the real trouble starts. I think we're going to have to run to the other side of town. And so we do. All of the Duchess's ladies are wearing corsets, and our passage is slower than I'd like. I herd them before me like a dog nipping at the heels of livestock. People rush past us fleeing the dead, and we're about halfway to the better side of town when I realize there ain't no way we're going to make it. The dead are slow, but so are ladies who can't breathe. I grab the Duchess and pull her to the side.
What's the problem, Jane?
She pants. We need to cut those lacings. If we don't, we're never going to make it to the other side of town. We're moving too slow. Eventually, people will get bit and turn, and they're going to move faster than those raggedy old shamblers. The fresh ones always do.
I am not cutting this corset,
Catherine announces. Only Catherine would have a tantrum in the midst of fleeing for her life. I give her a hard look, and she rolls her eyes and stomps her foot.
Fine.
I pull a knife from my boot, unfasten the back of her dress, cut the top few lacings, and fasten her back up. I do this with the Duchess and her girls, then tuck my knife away.
All right, ladies, I say, pick up those skirts and run.
We make better time, and when we get to the rows of houses, there's no sign of the dead yet. It's just the better families packing up to leave. People are running between the houses, grabbing what they can, piling it in wagons. No one is even going to try to save the town. They're just running for their lives. Bitterness twists my lips, and a hard feeling settles over me. These folks were more than happy to send us out there, day after day. But when it's their turn to fight, they ain't got the stomach for it. I lead us to Lily's house, one of the few without the front door open. I pound on the wood.
Lily, it's me. Open up.
There's a scraping on the other side of the door, and then,
how do I know you ain't a shambler? Shamblers don't talk. Stop being a muttonhead and let me in.
The door opens, and Lily flies into my arms. I hug her tightly, more out of surprise than anything else.
Someone came through, yelling about the town being overrun. I didn't know what to do.
Get Mrs. Spencer and the little ones. We need to get out of here, I say, pushing past Lily into the house.
Mrs. Spencer is gone. She left yesterday afternoon and never came back. It's just me and Thomas.
A toddler plays on the floor with a wooden horse, and he beams at me. I think about Mr. Spencer's body, missing its head. Was Mrs. Spencer out there as well? I didn't see her, but I also didn't peep at every decapitated shambler. Catherine, the Duchess, and her girls come into the house. The Duchess's expression goes soft when she sees Thomas.
Well, hello there, precious, she says, picking him up.
He offers her his horse before snuggling against the Duchess's unfettered bosom. I turn to Lily. The Spencer's got a pony? There's a town a couple days' ride north of here called Nicodemus. That's our best bet.
No one has a pony out here. We've got an old horse and a wagon, but I don't know how to hook him up. I do, and Sally here can help me,
Nessie says with an uncertain smile, gesturing to the white girl with the freckles. We follow them out to the small stable behind the house. The door hangs open, and there's a group of three drovers there, fighting with the horse, trying to hook it up to the wagon.
Hey, that's our wagon,
Lily exclaims. One of the men turns around, drawing down on us. The revolver catches the sunlight as he points it at Lily.
Sorry, little girl, that horde is picking up speed, and we ain't about to be turned.
At least take the children with you, the Duchess says.
There's resignation in her voice. The man looks behind him to where the two drovers have almost hooked the horse up.
No dead weight.
I reach for my sidearm, but before I can clear the holster, there's a gunshot. The drover is on the ground with a bullet right between his eyes.
Chivalry is apparently dead.
Behind us stands Jackson, and the scream of joy that Lily lets loose as she throws herself into her brother's arms damn near shatters my eardrums. I point my drawn gun at the remaining drovers, who have gone still. Nessie, Sally, make sure those fools have the horse hooked up right, and then take those straps.
They're called reins,
Jackson says, an amused drawl in his voice. I don't care if they're called shoestrings, I snap. That dead fellow was right. The horde is picking up speed.
What's gotten into you?
Red Jack asks, and I sigh. Leave it to you to pick the last possible moment to show up and save the day, I grumble. The women move quickly, fastening things and saying soft words to calm the horse. After a few seconds, Nessie nods at me.
It's good. Want me to drive?
Yes, I say. I point my pistol at the remaining men, waving them away from the wagon.
Clear on out now before you end up like your friend here.
I move to the body and pick up the man's pistol, handing it up to Sally, who sits next to Nessie. You know how to use that?
Yup,
Sally says, taking the gun with a gap-toothed smile.
Take us with you,
one of the men says as Lily climbs into the wagon, the Duchess handing up Thomas before doing the same. I realize the man pleading for his life is Alan, the boy who gave us a ride in the wagon only a few hours earlier. I give him a sneer of disgust. I don't take kindly to child killers or their friends.
But you're leaving us here without any weapons. We'll be overrun.
The click of a hammer being pulled back echoes loudly in the barn. The men turn to look at Jackson, who wears a half smile.
As long as your feet work, you can run. I suggest you go before that option is lost.
I tilt my head, feeling a calm that cannot be ascribed to the situation. Later I will look back and wonder at myself, my lack of compassion. I know this from experience. But for right now, there is only survival. I believe the phrase is dead weight.
Sorry, no dead weight.
Nessie slaps the reins along the horse's back, and the beast takes off, carrying the working girls and the children. She steers the wagon out of the yard and down a road along the back of the houses. Once they're clear, I tip my hat to the worthless drovers. Red Jack and Catherine take off after the wagon in a jog, and I follow not far behind. We leave town quickly, passing other people running for their lives as well. I stop briefly by the entrance to the Shambler wheel chamber, but the door is locked. The armory next to it hangs open, the room beyond, empty. Dread rises up in my middle, but I put it to the side. I'm hoping that Gideon got out alive. Perhaps there was another chamber down in that rabbit warren of his. Nessie sets a good pace out of town, and we pass other families in their wagons, as well as a few folks running. The dead are behind us, too far to see, too close to get comfortable. I get a side stitch and walk for a while, but not too long, because I don't want to lose sight of the wagon. Once we clear the breach in the northern wall, I pause and look back. The wagon trundles down the road that Jackson tells me leads to Nicodemus, but I'm in no hurry to follow it.
Ain't you afraid you're going to turn into a pillar of salt?
Jackson says from next to me. Catherine has stopped as well. Nah, my soul is too sullied for the Lord to bother much with me. I remember pulling the trigger and watching Bob go down. The sheriff's face as a buckshot hit him in the throat. The look of surprise and then nothing. How easy it was. Little more than a muscle spasm, yet world-ending for those men. But more than that, I remember the rage on the major's face back at Rose Hill the night before I shot him. and I remember the soft repose of his face as he slept, as I pulled the trigger, knowing that Rose Hill would never be safe as long as his will was law. After everyone came running, it was easier to say that he'd turned shambler than to tell the truth, how I was trying to protect Mama from him and his rage, how I'd gotten the pearl-handled revolver from her desk one night while everyone was asleep, just because I was afraid of what a man like that could do. Like I've said, the truth and I are uneasy companions at best. The fib was an easy one to tell. No one much asked, anyway. No one much wanted to know, I suppose. Who wants to think a child can murder a man? Especially a man everyone knows to secretly be her father. Either way, I am many things. A murderess just happens to be one of them. It's not something I think about all that much. And now I have two more dead men on my soul. I'll be fine. I'm an excellent liar, even to myself. An arm wraps around my shoulders and I look up in surprise as Jackson smiles down at me. I have something for you, Janie Jane. You remember that girl you used to run with, Sue? Big Sue, I say. She's alive? He nods. She and some of the other girls made it to Nicodemus. She found something as they were evacuating Miss Preston's, and I thought I should bring it to you. Jackson digs into the space between his vest and his shirt, pulls forth a letter, and pushes it into my hand. Then, he kisses me lightly on the lips. I'm glad you made it, Jane, he says, before turning and striding toward the wagon. I look down, and sure enough it's from my mama. My name scrawled across the front. I grip it too tightly, the fine vellum crumpling. Jane? Do you want some space? Catherine asks, and I shake my head. Can you wait with me while I read it? She nods, and I tear the letter open. The letter is dated nearly 2 months ago, only a few days before Catherine and I were sent here to Summerland. My hands shake, and as I read, the world narrows to a pinprick of light, all sound fading away, until only the roar of my heartbeat fills my ears. Rose Hill is no more, overrun by the dead, betrayed by my new husband. We have gone on the run, a safe place, run by survivalists. And then a name that I read over and over again. Haven, California. Haven, California. I stare at the letter for a long time, breathing in and out, my world coming apart one piece at a time. Rose Hill, my dream and my future, is no more. Betrayed by her new husband after he discovered she was a Negro, pretending to be white, my mother has gone to California to start a new life. To a town settled and run by survivalists. I turn behind me to look at the wagon heading to Nicodemus, another frontier town, just like Summerland. It strikes me that all of us, everywhere, are running. From the dead, from the uncertainty of the future, from ourselves. We are just always on the move. Is there really such a thing as home, when it's so easily destroyed? No matter what we do, each town is just the same as the last. Another chance to be overrun, to watch as everything and everyone we love is put in danger, time and time again. Doesn't matter the name of the place, it's only a matter of time until it's swept away in a wave of the dead. That doesn't seem like any kind of future to me. I look back at the letter I hold. California. Scrawled in my mother's hand, hastily, desperately. Find me, Jane. Jane McKean? What is it? Catherine asks, her eyes wide with worry. I get the feeling it isn't the first time she's asked me. I laugh, loud and long.
Ho, ho, ho. I am fortune's fool, I say. Knowing Catherine won't get the reference, but the quote is too apropos. I hold the letter up, feeling calmer and more focused than I have in weeks. I told the preacher that there would always be men like him and people like me to stop them, and I meant it. After the trials and tribulations of Summerland, I know my life's path. Stop the survivalists and all those like them. I'm done running away from trouble. Why not meet it head on? Stopping the survivalists. It's a lofty goal, but I ain't never been one for half measures. Kate, we're going to California. She gives me an incredulous look, but before she can ask any questions, I'm striding toward Nicodemus, quickly enough that she has to scurry to keep up with me. My sickles are heavy at my side, and my penny is a warm, comforting weight around my neck. For once, I'm happy, and I can't help but smile. It's a good day to be alive.
This is Bonnie Turpin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Dread Nation by Justina Ireland. This program was produced by Mosaic Audio. The director was Zach Villa. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Justina Ireland. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.